This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Iraqi and American officials all warned that violence was likely to increase as elections neared, and they've proved all too accurate. Gunmen killed Baghdad's deputy police chief and his son, also a policeman, on their way to work this morning. That less than a week after the assassination of Baghdad's provincial governor. Also today, two U.S. Marines were killed and four others injured when a roadside bomb blew up their Bradley fighting vehicle. Interim Prime Minister Iyad Alawi repeated his vow that national elections will be held as scheduled on January 30th, but some Iraqis, including some senior government officials, openly question whether it might not be better to postpone the vote for a few months. The principal concern is that violence and intimidation will dramatically reduce turnout in Sunni areas. That's where the insurgency is the strongest. Low turnout would translate into fewer seats in the National Assembly, a smaller voice, and a smaller stake in democracy, and more incentive to support the insurgents. Of course, postponement comes with risks, too. It would be a victory for the insurgents. It could anger Shias, and the violence could be just as bad when a new election date nears. We'll hear from Iraqi political figures and former U.S. officials in Iraq, and we want to hear from you. If you have questions about the election date or the voting process, give us a call. We'd particularly like to hear from Iraqis living in this country who plan to vote in the coming election. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. And we begin in Baghdad. Joining us now is Carl Vick, Baghdad Bureau Chief for The Washington Post. And it's good to have you back on the program.
Hi, thanks. Good to be here.
The biggest Sunni political party has already announced it won't participate. Then there's today's news that the head of the election commission in Al-Anbar province has resigned. That's, of course, where the cities of Fallujah and Ramadi are, west of Baghdad. What's the significance of that?
Well, the significance is chiefly symbolic at this point. Anbar has been very troubled. It's insurgent-rich. It's the province that includes Fallujah. And there really hasn't been a lot of election activity going on there now, at least above the radar. No registration occurred there officially, and the hope was to do registration on the day of voting, January 30th. But the election commission resigned en masse, I think out of fear. One of our reporters went there the other day. He was told they were all in hiding. It's just not an election-friendly, sort of civic-minded atmosphere there right now, and security is unstable through large sections of it.
The Association of Muslim Scholars, which is an influential Sunni group, said it would retract its call for a boycott of the elections if the U.S. would give a timetable for withdrawal. The timetable for withdrawal is not on the cards, at least if you listen to officials, including the President of the United States here in Washington. But does this suggest that there is some room for negotiation with this group?
Well, it does suggest that. And what you hear when you talk to American officials here is that Sunni politicians led by this Association of Muslim Scholars and other groups that have been very, very hostile to the American occupation and the American project here is that they're willing to, they basically totally reject the American presence here, and they're not willing to work with any organization that works with the Americans. When you talk to the Americans, they say that for public consumption you hear offers like this one, but that privately it's a harder line, and basically these groups want what they had before Saddam Hussein was deposed, which was primacy over the Shia and the Kurds, the Shia being the majority population in Iraq and the Kurds being an oppressed minority in the north. They basically say it's sort of a double game, that these declarations are public consumption, as they say, and not entirely sincere. There's a larger question of whether if the Americans set a timetable, that would make things better or worse in the short term and in the long term after they leave, whether people would keep their powder dry and there would be a real problem, real security problem in the absence of U.S. forces.
As you go around in Baghdad itself, you mentioned there's very little in the way of electioneering going on in Al-Anbar province, Fallujah and Ramadi. What about in Baghdad?
In Baghdad, you see the trappings of an election. You see posters up, mostly Shia posters, many of them picturing the leader of the Shia doctrine here, Ayatollah Ali Sistani, urging people to vote to get out. You also see party posters, candidate posters. What you don't see is campaign rallies. Any group in Baghdad is basically a magnet for some kind of attack. Most feared, of course, is the car bombs that detonate around Iraq several times a day. And you see some television presence, not a profound amount of TV advertising yet, except by the government of Iraq and the government of Iraq and other sort of nonprofits who are urging Iraqis to vote and assert their sense of national identity and pride and holding their country together by showing up at the ballot boxes on January 30.
As we said earlier, the interim prime minister, Iyad Alawi, reiterated again today the election will go ahead as scheduled. Are you getting any sense of hesitation?
I don't. No, there is. You will hear things from his cabinet, which is constituent of the assorted, you know, constituencies in Iraq, some of whom want to see a delay. And so you'll see cabinet members playing to those constituencies and saying, yes, I would advise a delay. I think it's best. Essentially, that's for domestic consumption, look like good players. I'm getting no sense from the Americans and from very senior Iraqis that there is any kind of significant delay in the cards. You know, President Bush has staked his credibility on a January 30 election. The sense in the embassy and among commanders is that any delay will play to the hands of insurgents and look like a victory for them and strengthen their movement. So, and there's also the question of legal basis. The law that obtains now in Iraq demands elections explicitly by the end of January. That law was strongly endorsed and demanded by Ayatollah Sistani and the Shia majority, and representatives of the Shia majority here. They feel any significant slippage will be a back down by the Americans and a denial of their majority right.
Carl Vick, thanks very much for being with us, as always.
Thank you.
Carl Vick is the Baghdad bureau chief for the Washington Post and was with us from his office in Baghdad. Joining us to talk now more about the elections in Iraq is Larry Diamond, an advisor to Paul Bremer, the U.S. head of the Coalition Provision Authority in Baghdad for several months earlier this year, now a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution at Stanford University in California. But he's with us today here in Studio 3A, and nice to meet you in person, Larry. Welcome.
Good afternoon,
to Talk of the Nation.
Neil.
You wrote an op-ed piece in yesterday's New York Times saying that if the elections go ahead on January 30th, it could increase political polarization as opposed to pulling the country together.
Mm-hmm. Well, the problem is that there is a whole section of the country now that feels alienated from the process, doesn't have trust in it, feels that the type of electoral system that is going to be used, which will apportion seats strictly on the basis of the national vote, so there's no guarantee of any geographic distribution, will greatly disadvantage them because turnout is bound to be much less in the Sunni areas because of the greater disruption and violence. So many of these actors in the Sunni heartland, and they're not just all insurgents and terrorists, many of them are moderates and Democrats and people who've been involved in the process. One of them met with Bush in the Oval Office before the war. They feel that a change is needed for basic reasons of fairness.
That because they won't be able to get out to vote, they won't get the representation their numbers would normally accord them.
Precisely. And therefore, they feel that if they participate, then they will legitimate a process that's intrinsically unfair and confirm the marginalization politically that they already experience.
Yet we seem to be in a situation where the fear is that they would then go and support the insurgents, the other political force in that region. But it seems to be almost a win-win for the insurgents. If the elections are postponed, they get a win. If the elections go ahead and they're unfair, they win.
See, this is where I think we need to engage in a little more creative thinking than many people in the media have been doing and then that the Bush administration has been doing. It seems to me there, of the various circumstances in which the terrorists win, the circumstance in which they least win and in which we might break through to something much more positive is one not simply where there's a postponement in the abstract, but where there is a postponement as a result of or as part of a process of reaching a new accommodation that might alter the electoral system somewhat, address some other concerns, particularly of the Sunnis that are sitting outside the process now, and therefore create a more inclusive and legitimate electoral process that would be much more, have much more confidence and participation in the country. It seems to me if that happens, the terrorists wind up losing.
So call a meeting of, let's say, interested groups that might include some groups the United States might be not be terribly thrilled about, but give them a concession on the date, draw them into the political process, thereby isolating the insurgents.
Well, it seems to me the bargain that's out there is, on the one hand, the Sunnis that are sitting outside the process now get a postponement and some reasonable alteration of the electoral system. In return, they agree to participate in the political process and use all of their influence to try and wind down these various forms of violence. And therefore, what the Shias get is, first of all, an electoral victory that will be seen as more legitimate because there'll be broader participation in the country.
And there should be no disillusion. The Shias are likely to get a victory no matter what
happens.
I think
it is likely that the United Iraqi Alliance, which appears to have the implicit endorsement of Ayatollah Sistani, will win a plurality, if not a majority of seats, whenever the election is held, and by any type of electoral system that might reasonably be chosen. So the question is, their margin might be reduced, obviously, with the postponement and the change in the electoral system, but it would come in a way that there'd be more consensus in the country and less violence, and therefore it would be a victory more worth having.
Larry Diamond is with us here in Studio 3A. When we come back from a short break, we'll be speaking with a couple of Iraqi political figures and also hearing a dissenting view from somebody who also worked in Baghdad for the administration. And of course, we'll be taking some of your calls and emails. TOTN at NPR.org is the email address. Our phone number, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. We'll be back after a short break. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about the upcoming Iraqi election scheduled for the end of this month, the 30th of January, with violence increasing every day. Some call for the vote to be postponed. Of course, you're invited to join the discussion. Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, the email address, TOTN at NPR.org. Our guest is Larry Diamond, a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution at Stanford University. And joining us now is Adnan Pachici. He served as foreign minister of Iraq before Saddam Hussein came to power. He's currently a member of the National Assembly and head of the Iraqi Independent Democrats Party. Adnan Pachici joined us by phone from Abu Dhabi today. And thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
You recently wrote an op-ed column in the Washington Post calling for the election to be delayed. How come?
Well, I gave the reasons. The main reason, really, is that we're afraid that there'll be a very low voter turnout in many key areas of the country, especially Baghdad and Mosul. And because of the electoral system, which treats Iraq as one electoral district, and the system of proportional representation, it means that if there's going to be a low turnout in one area and several areas, and there'll be a high turnout in others, there'll be a clear imbalance in the membership of the National Assembly. And since this National Assembly is entrusted with writing a new permanent constitution, it is absolutely necessary that all segments of the Iraqi population should be adequately represented in the National Assembly. And this cannot be done if there is a very low turnout in many areas. That's why we ask for a postponement so that we can have dialogue, enter into serious dialogue with all those factions that are threatening to boycott the election, to see whether we can address some of their grievances and concerns, and perhaps to see whether we can satisfy some of their demands. And if this can happen, first of all, improve the security situation, and also it may induce many people who are now threatening to boycott the election to take part in the political process and vote.
I should say you're a Sunni, and your party is continuing to stand for the election and will participate on January 30th. Is that right?
Yes. I mean, you know, my party has everything. It has Sunnis, Shias, Kurds, Arabs, Turkmans. If you ask me how many Shias there are and how many Sunnis, I really don't know, because I don't ask. I never ask.
What would be in it for the Shia parties, or for Ayatollah Sistani, to postpone?
Well, because I think they must be interested in credible and legitimate elections, because they expect to gain probably more seats than any other party. I mean this list, which is supposedly has the blessing of Sayyid Abdullah of Sistani. You know, I think it's in their interest. I've been telling them that postponement, if postponement will bring about a credible and more legitimate and more inclusive election, that will be in their interest. Because if they are going to have an election which is open to accusations of non-inclusiveness, of illegitimacy, then I think their victory, their electoral victory, would be a Pyrrhic victory. It would be an empty and useless victory, frankly.
Let's get a listener involved in the conversation. Saleh joins us from Minneapolis.
Hello, Neil. Thank you very much for giving me the chance.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm Iraqi Shiite, but I have a lot of Sunni friends, and really there are no differences regarding, as it's been portrayed in the media, between Shias and Sunnis. But I think from what I hear from even my Sunni friends, that they are intimidated by this Muslim scholar group that imposed itself on them with leadership of people like Harif al-Bari and his son Muthanna, who are the regular guest on Al Jazeera network. That and themselves, they used to be Ba'athists, and they have connection to Saddamist groups, and they were negotiating in the hostage taking. So those people, they didn't want the election to go forward. They will do anything to postpone it, and without any chance like to have it in the future. Mm-hmm. So they were intimidated. Many people in the Sunni areas are intimidated by these people, and they are not given the chance to kind of join. A lot of people that I know, they want that to participate in the election, and they want democracy to start in Iraq as soon as possible. I'm one of the people who are hopefully looking forward to vote.
Let's get a response from Adnan Pachachi.
Yes.
Sir?
Yes.
There's clearly intimidation going on by whatever group, certainly in Sunni areas. Isn't postponement a victory for them?
Well, there is intimidation. Also, some people are not going to vote because they have certain grievances and demands, which they think they are legitimate and they should be met. And others are afraid. They are afraid because of the general uncertainty of the security situation. But yes, there is intimidation, there is fear, and there is also anger, if you can call that, or demand. People are resentful that they have been marginalized and that they have certain demands and grievances. Some of them perhaps are not justified, but if there are any demands and grievances that can be met and can be satisfied, then I think it's worthwhile, because then we'll have a really credible and inclusive election. The main thing is we must have an inclusive election. We cannot have an election in which certain parts of the country vote heavily and many important parts, especially Baghdad and Mosul, voting with a very low turnout, and voting becomes very is very meager.
Saleh, thanks very much for the call.
Neil, can I have just one more comment?
Certainly.
Yes. Yeah, I would rather take a chance with Mr. Pachetti on the line. I really appeal to him and appeal to all the Sunni figures to kind of come up to put pressure on this Muslim scholar group, the Sunni Muslim scholar group, to ask them to condemn all this killing that's going on, especially against the police and the people who's trying to get any system and order in Iraq. So Mr. Pachetti and his group, they have to kind of also show their voices along with the Shia and the Kurds and the rest of the country to put a stop to this killing and car bombing that is going on, which is, we don't see too much condemnation coming from the Sunni side, unfortunately.
Well, we have condemned them very strongly, time and again.
Yeah, I hope, you know, I don't know how these people operate. If you are not supporting them, the Shia are not supporting, the Kurds are not supporting them, I don't know. Who are these people? What is their agenda? Where are they coming from? It is really very tragic to see a lot of people, a lot of police getting killed every day, and which is intimidating the whole process inside the country.
Saleh, thanks very much. We'd appreciate the
Thank
phone call.
Thank you very much, Neil.
And Adnan Pachetti, we know it's late where you are. We appreciate your staying up to speak with us.
Thank you.
Adnan Pachetti is a member of the National Assembly and head of the Iraqi Independent Democrats Party. He was with us on the phone from Abu Dhabi in the United Arab Emirates. And for a different perspective, joining us now is Saad Jawad. He's deputy head of the Political Bureau of the Supreme Council for Islamic Revolution in Iraq. That's the leading Shiite party, which is part of a joint slate of candidates known as the United Iraqi Alliance. Saad Jawad joins us from his home in Baghdad. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Adnan Pachetti, you're also running for the National Assembly. But as I understand it, you think elections should go ahead as scheduled on January 30th.
Yes, indeed. I think the election should go ahead as scheduled. And this is what all parties agreed to it. This is the opinion of the Independent Electoral Commission. This is the opinion of the Secretary General of the United Nations, Mr. Kofi Annan. This is the opinion of the interim government. This is the opinion of the overwhelming number of political parties that are participating in the election.
As I'm sure you know, some say if small numbers only of Sunnis turn out to vote, it will be an election not worth winning. It will not be seen as credible or as legitimate.
Of course, I mean, it is important, particularly for us in Iraq, that all components of the Iraq society should participate in this the transitional election, particularly the Shias, the Kurds, the Sunnis, although there are no elections in the world that are better, that produce 90 or 80% participation. But I think for us, we do hope to have a good participation, something much better than 50%. That would include the Sunnis and the Shias, and because I have no doubt that the election would include all those components. Yeah, probably not to the same extent, to the same level. We might see, for example, probably better participation in Shia's area than Sunni's area.
Mm-hmm.
By no means that means there are a Sunni boycott to the election. No way.
Could you see making some numerical adjustments after the election to reflect the number of in some areas who do not come out to vote, who may have been intimidated?
Well, unfortunately, the election system that we follow is a proportional representation system that considers the whole of Iraq as one area. And in this way, there are no way of making any adjustment to the seats or to the election. And we have to go just by the turnout. Having said that, now all Shia parties who are expected to take the majority of the National Assembly, they said it very clearly that they do believe in the partnership principle for the political process after election. And that means that no matter the result of the election is, the Sunnis, the Kurds, the Shias, the Owls, they will participate in the political process after election. Whether that is regarding forming the transitional government, whether that is regarding drafting the constitution, both of the two important tasks of the National Assembly, they will see participation of Sunnis as well as Kurds, as well as Shias.
Saad Jawad, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Saad Jawad is deputy head of the Political Bureau for the Supreme Council for the Islamic Revolution in Iraq and joined us by phone from his home in Baghdad. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Larry Diamond is still with us here in Studio 3A. And as you heard these two particular figures, I think their opinions are pretty well known to you. As you look ahead to this, what do you make of it? It now looks as if things are going to go ahead.
I think the clear likelihood now, Neil, is that elections will take place on January 30th. However, I can tell you it's not just a few members of Prime Minister Alawi's cabinet that think this is now a mistake. There are reports that the very substantial majority of this cabinet, not just saying publicly, but more emphatically privately, that there's a train wreck headed here down the road and that something needs to be done to avert it. And the something is along the lines of what Dr. Pachachi said, namely that there is a postponement of the election, a broad national roundtable discussion of some kind that alters the electoral system and creates a more inclusive process that will result in a more legitimate government. I want to say we can't possibly know for sure, but I believe, on the basis of my experience there and of following this since, that if we were to achieve this, negotiations with a wide variety of actors in Iraq, including the Association of Muslim Scholars, to change the electoral system, increase confidence in the process, lift the electoral boycott, that this would result in a significant reduction in the violence, and that fewer Americans would die as a result of this and fewer Iraqis.
Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Mark, who joins us from Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Yeah, I have a question. I'm wondering why in the very beginning we didn't consider helping this country set itself up as a confederation or a republic where we could have had a Kurdistan, a Sunnistan, a Shiistan, all under the confederation of Iraqi states with a centralized federal government. Everybody has their own piece of turf, and their little tribal system can flourish within their own piece of turf, and we wouldn't have everybody right now arguing when you'd have a representative federal government in much the same way that the U.S. is set up, based on a percentage of population, and all of the assets of the oil would be nationalized, and they could divide it up between the states on a fair and impartial basis.
Well, Larry Diamond, you were there at the time. Why was it?
Well, what the caller is describing is fairly close to what the interim constitution, although it's not called that, it's called a transitional administrative law, in fact provides for. The Kurdistan regional government continues with a very considerable degree of autonomy for the transitional period, which runs from the handover of power on June 28th until the end of next year. And other provinces will have autonomy too. The problem is that this is only a transitional document. And the assembly to be elected on January 30th is to write a permanent constitution. And it's precisely the struggle over the rules for the permanent constitution that now are generating a great deal of emotion and concern.
And suspicion among Kurdish groups that their autonomy could be undone, suspicions among Shias that their numbers would not be reflected.
Among Sunnis that their numbers would not be reflected. And, of course, the Shias believe that they're a clear majority of the population, and they want that reflected in the power balance.
Mm-hmm. Mark, thank you very much for the phone call.
Thank you for the answer.
We're discussing the Iraqi elections. We're going to take a short break, and we'll continue this discussion after we get back. If you'd like to join us again, the phone number, 800-989-8255. Email totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Today we're talking about the forthcoming elections in Iraq scheduled for January 30th. Our guest is Larry Diamond, a former advisor to the Coalition Provisional Authority and now a senior fellow at the Hoover Institutions at Stanford University. And joining us now is Dan Senor, who you may remember as the former spokesman for the U.S. Coalition Provisional Authority in Baghdad. He joins us from his office in Washington. Nice to have you on the program.
Good to be with you, Neil.
President Bush has said the elections will take place as scheduled on the 30th of January, despite the escalation in Washington, despite the concerns of many, as I'm sure you know, that turnout in the Sunni areas will be greatly depressed. Why is keeping firm to that date so important?
Well, you have to ask what the strategy is of the insurgents. The insurgents don't want elections, period. They would prefer for the elections to be in a permanent state of delay, one delay after the next. So those who are advocating a delay in order to avoid the violence on Election Day, let's say they say we should have the election in 3 months, do they really believe that the security situation is going to be dramatically better between now and then to the point to allow for quiet and peaceful and normal elections in 3 months? Of course not. The insurgents will only ramp up violence. Violence will beget more violence because they will have seen that their strategy has worked. Violence has resulted in a delay. So there'll be more violence in 3 months, and then there'll be more calls for another delay. And this charade will go on endlessly. So it's akin to sort of to negotiating with terrorists, if you will. It will hand the insurgents an enormous victory. The other argument for delay, which is that the system is bad. The system doesn't work. A proportional single district system won't allow Sunnis to compete effectively or fairly. The alternative to this system is a multi-district system or something like Larry Diamond is now advocating, which is have districts allotted in various provinces. In order to do that, however, you are going to have to reach consensus, get all the various groups and sectarian groups and ethnic groups in Iraq and regional groups to agree on population size for these various provinces. There's no agreement on that now. The Sunnis may say that the Al-Anbar province should have 19 districts, whereas the Shia may say it should have 10 districts. How do you resolve that without a census? And census will take 18 to 24 months. The Shia would never tolerate an election delay that long. So I think if you look at the argument for delay based on violence or delay based on redrafting a new system, either way, now, it won't get us where we need to be, and it's the best-case scenario, and albeit not a perfect-case scenario, but the best-case scenario is just to move forward now with the elections, and there'll be two more elections later in the year.
Well, fortunately, we have Larry Diamond here in the studio. He's capable of making his own argument on that basis himself. What's the argument? You said it before to us, but if you would respond.
Well, okay. First of all, I think Dan is entirely right in his first point. If we delay simply to wait for a less violent situation, we may be delaying forever. So the only logic to delay is to try to use the delay to create a broader and more inclusive political consensus in the country. As to the second point, the electoral system I'm advocating now is the one I advocated a year ago when I was sitting in the Republican Palace in Baghdad advising the Coalition Provisional Authority, and which many Iraqis were talking about at the time. And that is one based on multi-member districts in the provinces. Dan is right. There would be dispute about how many seats to the provinces. But the point is that you can have as many multi-member proportional representation systems do, a second tier of distribution to add some additional seats in the second tier of distribution to a list that had gotten more votes than the seats that they were accorded from the districts. So you have an adjustment mechanism. For example, if the Shias win vastly more, the United Iraqi List, for example.
Their list of candidates.
Yes, if their list of candidates comes out being severely underrepresented in the parliament, there would be some ability to adjust for that based on their overall proportion of the vote. But it's a kind of compromise, Neil. The various provinces would know that they have some minimum degree of representation, and the list that think they're going to do better than what they might do from the geographical representation would know that they're going to get at least some additional representation based on their overall national vote.
Dan Senor?
Yeah, I don't think, for instance, in the case of the Shia, I don't think you're going to get the Shia to agree to a certain number of districts allotted in these Sunni provinces that is higher than what the Shia believe the Sunni percentage representation is in the population. If the Sunni, if the Shia believe that the Sunnis don't have more than 15 to 20% of the population, they're not going to allow for congressional districts that would produce Sunni representation in the parliament that is higher than that. Getting the Sunnis to agree to that is going to be very difficult. I agree with Larry that it would require a compromise. I'm just not sure. Here we are, you know, on the eve of either this election or subsequent elections in Iraq later this year. I don't think you're going to get that kind of consensus without moving forward with a full-scale census to determine what these numbers are, what these population numbers are, because right now you just have a bunch of politically biased population estimates by the various groups.
Let me. There's an email question from Gino Scarcelli. What's the position of the Kurds and the Kurdish parties in the postponement of an election?
They are against it. The Kurds, to my knowledge, most of the Kurdish political leaders want to move forward. And that's an interesting question because the Kurds represent approximately the same percentage of the Iraqi population that the Sunnis do. Yet the Kurds have made a strategic decision that they're going to be involved, that even though it's unlikely that there will be a Kurdish prime minister of Iraq, much as there will be unlikely there will be a Sunni prime minister of Iraq, there is a potential for the Kurds to play a very influential role in the government. Whichever bloc has the majority in the Iraqi parliament, in order to form a government, it's going to have to reach out to some of these smaller parties to form a governing majority, and that's where a Kurdish list can be very influential, and a Sunni list could too. The Kurds have made the strategic decision to move forward and play a real serious role in this election, not calling for delays, because they recognize that while they will not be running the country, they can play an influential role.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Mahmoud, who's with us from Denver, Colorado.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Neil. Great show. My question is, I heard Donald Rumsfeld say that government type like the one in Iran is not going to happen, but what if the population chooses just that? What's going to happen then?
In other words, Mahmoud, what if there's a fundamentalist Shia government elected, as in Iran?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
What happens then, Dan Senor?
Well, the problem in Iran is not governments getting elected. The problem is that government's running a sort of pseudo-totalitarian regime where there is no accountability and there is no representative government and there are no real elections. In Iraq, no matter who is elected, is going to have to be held accountable to the Iraqis, and there'll be subsequent elections. And by the way, most of the leaders within the even the more sort of religious elements within the Shia leadership do not advocate any kind of governance model that's similar to the Iranian model. So it's a different school of Shia thought and religious practice, and a different school on the role of Islam in the state than exists in Iran.
Thank you for the call, Mahmoud.
Thank you very much.
In the couple of minutes we have remaining, I wanted to ask both of you, the concern I know that you have, Larry Diamond, is that this could deepen divisions between Sunnis and Shias in Iraq, might even leading to the transformation of this from an insurgency to a civil war.
I think, sadly, Neil, that is the road on which we're on now, unless something is done in order to bring the Sunnis into the political process. It is conceivable, as administration officials are talking about, that the something, the adjustment, the effort at outreach and inclusion, could happen after the election, but it's going to be extremely awkward and extremely difficult. And the disaffection, it is important to emphasize to all of our listeners, is not just among terrorists. It is among relatively moderate, democratic, and civic types who see their portion of the country at risk of being largely excluded from the political process. And even some of those who are supporting the violence now, I believe, are doing so for fairly tactical reasons. And if they think they're going to have not control of the political system, as the Sunni may have had before, but at least a significant place at the political table, they might be able to be brought into the political process. And again, I think that is very important to the future of Iraq, its stability and democracy, and to the national security of the United States.
Dan Senor, the last minute is yours.
Yeah, I've been hearing for a year and a half. I was during the entire 15 months I was in Iraq, the month before I left, that there was going to be a civil war. Every stage of the game, there's going to be a civil war. It hasn't happened. It's not that there haven't been opportunities for it. Certainly some Sunni extremists like Abu Musab al-Zarqawi have tried to provoke the Shia into a civil war with these huge terrorist attacks against Shia mosques, against Shia towns. It hasn't happened. The Shia haven't engaged in real reprisals. I think most Iraqis want the center to hold, and that'll continue to be the case. I do think, however, we will have increased sectarian tension, not a civil war, increased sectarian tension if we put off the election. I think the Shia will be outraged. They'll feel misled. The Shia leaders, Ayatollah Sistani, will view this as a situation where they sort of have to take matters into their own hands. They want elections badly. They want it quicker than we or the UN have been able to set them up in Iraq. And I think we have an obligation to keep our promise to do them by the date we said we would.
Dan Senor, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Dan Senor, former spokesman for the Coalition Provisional Authority in Baghdad. And our thanks also to Larry Diamond, who joined us here in Studio 3A. Larry
it's
Diamond,
a
senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, a former advisor to the Coalition Provisional Authority in Baghdad.